the book would consider such an idea a dire abomination unto Nuggan. It may be in error. I shall consult the Duchess. Bless this cup, that I may drink of it, she added.
Yes, said Polly,
and wondered what she should dread more, Maledict suddenly turning into a ravening monster, or Wazzer reaching the end of whatever mental journey she was taking. She'd been a kitchen maid, and now she was subjecting the book to critical analysis and talking to a religious icon. That sort of thing led to friction. The presence of those seeking the truth is infinitely to be preferred to the presence of those who think they've found it. Besides, she thought as she watched Wazzer drink, you only thought the world would be better if it was run by women if you didn't actually know many women, or old women at least. Take the whole thing about the dimity scarves. Women had to cover their hair on Fridays, but there was nothing about this in the book, which was pretty damn rigorous about most things. It was just a custom. It was done because it had always been done. And if you forgot or didn't want to, the old women got you. They had eyes like hawks. They could practically see through walls. And the men took notice because no man wanted to cross the crones in case they started watching him. So half-hearted punishment would be dealt out. Whenever there was an execution, and especially when there was a whipping, you always found the grannies in the front row sucking on peppermints. Polly had forgotten her dimity scarf. She did wear it at home on Fridays, for no other reason than that it was easier than not doing so. She vowed that if she ever got back, she'd never do it again.
Was, she said.
Yes, Polly.
You've got a direct line to the Duchess, have you?
We talk about things, said Wazzer dreamily.
You, couldn't raise the subject of coffee, could you? Said Polly wretchedly.
The Duchess can only move very, very small things, said Wazzer. A few beans, perhaps. Waz, we really need some coffee. I don't think the acorns are that much of a substitute.
I will pray, said Wazzer.
Good, you do that, said Polly. And strangely enough, she felt a little more hopeful. Maledict had hallucinations, but Wazzer had a certainty you could bend steel around. It was the opposite of a hallucination somehow. It was as if she could see what was real and you couldn't.
Polly, said Wazzer.
Yes.
You don't believe in the Duchess, do you? I mean, the real Duchess, not your inn.
Polly looked into the small, pinched, intense face.
Well, I mean, they say she's dead, and I prayed to her when I was small, but since you ask, I don't exactly, believe, as, she gabbled. She is standing just behind you, just behind your right shoulder.
In the silence of the woods, Polly turned.
I can't see her, she said.
I am happy for you, said Wazzer, handing her the empty mug.
But I didn't see anything, said Polly.
No, said Wazzer,
but you turned round.
Polly had never asked too many questions about the girls' working school. She was, by definition, a good girl. Her father was an influential man in the community, and she worked hard. She didn't have much to do with men, and, most important, she was, well, smart. She was bright enough to do what a lot of other people did in the chronic, reason-free insanity that was everyday life in Munns. She knew what to see and what to ignore, when to obey and when to merely present the face of obedience, when to speak and when to keep her thoughts to herself. She learned the ways of the survivor. Most people did. But if you rebelled, or were merely dangerously honest, or had the wrong kind of illness, or were not wanted, or were a girl who liked the boys more than the old women thought you should, and worse, were not good at counting, then the school was your destination. She didn't know much about what went on in there, but imagination rushed to fill the gap. And she wondered what happened to you in that hellish pressure cooker. If you were tough like Tonka, it boiled you hard and gave you a shell. Lofty, it was hard to know. She was quiet and shy until you saw firelight reflected in her eyes, and sometimes the flames were there in the absence of any fire to reflect. But if you were Wazzer,
dealt a poor hand to start with, and locked up, and starved, and beaten, and mistreated Nuggan knew how. And yes, Polly thought, Nuggan probably did know how. And pushed deeper and deeper into yourself. What would you find down there? And then you'd look up from those depths into the only smile you ever saw. The last man on guard duty was Jackram, because Shufti was busy cooking. He was sitting on a mossy rock, crossbow in one hand, staring at something in his hand. He spun around as she approached, and Polly caught the gleam of gold as something was shoved back in his jacket. The sergeant lowered the bow.
"You make enough noise for an elephant, Perks," he said.
"Sorry, Sarge," said Polly, who knew she hadn't. He took the tea mug and turned to point downhill.
"See that bush down there, Perks," he said. "Just to the right of that fallen log."
Polly squinted. "Yes, Sarge," she said.
"Notice anything about it?"
Polly stared again. There must be something wrong about it, she decided, otherwise he wouldn't have asked her. She concentrated. "The shadow's wrong," she decided at last.
"Good lad. The reason being, our chum is behind the bush. He's been a-watching of me, and I've been a-watching of him. Nothing else for it. He'll have it away on his toes as soon as he sees anyone move, and he's too far away to drop an arrow on him."
"An enemy?"
"I don't think so."
"A friend?"
"Cocky devil, at any rate. He doesn't care that I know he's there. You go on back up the hill, lad, and bring down that big bow we got off the—" There he goes.
The shadow had vanished. Polly stared into the woods, but the long light was getting crimson, and dusk was unfolding between the trees.
"It's a wolf," said Jackram.
"A werewolf," said Polly.
"Now, what makes you think that?"
"Because Sergeant Towering said we'd got a werewolf in the squad. I'm sure we haven't. I mean, we'd have found out by now, wouldn't we? But I wondered if they'd seen one."
"Can't do anything about it anyway," said Jackram. "A silver arrow would do the job, but we've got none."
"What about our shilling, Sarge?"
"Oh, you think you can kill a werewolf with an IOU?"
"Oh, yeah." Then Polly added, "You've got a real shilling, Sarge, around your neck, with that gold medallion." If you could have bent steel around Woz's certainty, you could have heated it with Jackram's glare.
"What's round my neck is no business of yours, Perks, and the only thing worse than a werewolf is me if anyone tries to take my shilling off me, understand?"
He softened as he saw Polly's terrified expression. "We'll move on after we've eaten," he said. "Find a better place for a rest. Somewhere easier to defend."
"We're all pretty tired, Sarge."
"So I want us all to be upright and armed if our friend comes back with his chums," said Jackram.
He followed her gaze. The gold locket had slipped out of his jacket and dangled guiltily on its chain. He deftly tucked it away.
"She was just a girl I knew," said Jackram. "That's all, right? It was a long time ago."
"I didn't ask you, Sarge," said Polly, backing away.
Jackram's shoulders settled.
"That's right, lad, you didn't. And I ain't asking you about anything neither. But I reckon we'd better find the corporal some coffee, eh?"
"Amen to that, Sarge."
"And our Rupert's dreaming of laurel wreaths all round his head, Perks. We've got ourselves a goddamn hero here. Can't think, can't fight, no bloody use at all except for a famous last stand and a medal sent to his old mum. And I've been in a few famous last stands, lad, and they are butcher shops. That's what Blouse is leading you into, mark my words. What'll you lot do then, eh? We've had a few scuffles, but that's not war. Think you'll be man enough to stand when the metal meets the meat?"
"You did, Sarge," said Polly. "You said you were in a few last stands."
"Yeah, lad, but I was holding the metal."
Polly walked back up the slope.
"All this," she thought, "and we haven't even got there. Sarge is thinking about the girl he left behind. Well, that's normal. And Tonka and Lofty only think about one another. But I suppose after you've been in that school... And as for Wazza..." Polly wondered how she would have survived the school. Would she have grown hard, like Tonka? Would she have just folded up inside, like the maids who came and went and worked hard and never had a name? Or perhaps she would have become like Wazza, and found some door in her own head. "I may be lowly, but I talk to gods."
Wazza had said, "Not your inn." Had she ever told Wazza about the Duchess? Surely not. Surely she... But no, she had told Tonka, hadn't she? That was it, then, all explained. Tonka must have mentioned it to Wazza at some point. Nothing weird about it at all. Even if practically no one ever had a conversation with Waz. It was so hard. She was so intense, so coiled up. But that had to be the only explanation. Yes. She wasn't going to let there be any other. Polly shivered, and was aware that someone was walking beside her. She looked up and groaned. It was a tall, robed figure with a scythe. "You're a hallucination, right?"
"Oh, yes. You are all in a state of heightened sensibility caused by mental contagion and lack of sleep."
"If you're a hallucination, how do you know that?"
"I know it because you know it. I am simply better at articulating it," said Death.
"I'm not going to die, am I? I mean, right now."
"No. But you were told that you would walk with Death every day."
"Oh, yes. Corporal Scallop said that."
"He is an old friend. You might say he is on the installment plan."
"Do you mind walking a bit more invisibly?"
"Of course. How's this?"
"And quietly, too?" There was silence, which was presumably the answer. "And polish yourself up a bit," said Polly to the empty air. "And that robe needs a wash." There was no reply, but she felt better for saying it. Shufti had cooked beef stew with dumplings and herbs. It was magnificent. It was also a mystery.
"I don't recall us passing a cow, Private," said Blouse as he handed his tin plate along for a second helping.
No, sir."
"And yet you have acquired beef."
Yes, sir. When that writer man came up in his cart, well, when you were talking, I crept around and I took a look inside."
"There's a name for someone who does that sort of thing, Private," said Blouse severely.
"Yeah, it's Quartermaster, Shufti. Well done," said Jackram. "If that writer man gets hungry, he can always eat his words, eh, Lieutenant?"
Yes, said Blouse carefully. "Yes, of course. Good initiative, Private." "Oh, I didn't think it up, sir," said Shufti brightly. "Sarge told me to."
Polly stopped, spoon halfway to her mouth, and swiveled her eyes from Sergeant to Lieutenant.
"You teach looting, Sergeant," said Blouse.
There was a joint gasp from the squad.
If this was the bar back at the Duchess, the regulars would have been hurrying out of the doors, and Polly would have been helping her father get the bottles off the shelf.
"Not looting, sir, not looting," said Jackram calmly, licking his spoon. "Under Duchess's regulations, Rule 611, Section 1C, Paragraph I, sir, it would be plundering, said cart being the property of Bloody Ankh Morpork, sir, which is aiding and abetting the enemy. Plundering is allowed, sir."
The two men held eye contact for a moment, and then Blouse reached behind him and into his pack. Polly saw him draw out a small, yet thick, book.
"Rule 611, he murmured.
Blouse glanced up at the sergeant and thumbed through the thin, shiny pages.
611, pillaging, plundering and looting, ah yes. And let me see. You are with us, Sergeant Jackram, owing to Rule 796, I think you reminded me at the time."
There was another silence, broken only by the riffle of the pages.
796, 796, said Blouse softly. "Ah!"
He stared at the page, and Jackram stared at him. And Polly watched Jackram and knew that there was no Rule 796. Blouse closed the book with a leathery thwap.
"Absolutely correct, Sergeant," he said brightly. "I commend you on your encyclopedic knowledge of the regulations."
Jackram looked astounded.
"What?"
"You were practically word perfect, Sergeant," said Blouse,
and there was a gleam in his eye. Polly remembered Blouse looking at the captured cavalry captain. This was that same look
the look which said, "Now I have the upper hand." Jackram's chins wobbled. "You had something to add, Sergeant?" said Blaz.
No, sir," said Jackram, his face an open declaration of war.
"We'll leave at moonrise," said Blaz. "I suggest we all get some rest until then, and then may we prevail."
He nodded to the group and walked over to where Polly had spread his blanket in the lee of the bushes. After a few moments there were some snores, which Polly refused to believe. Jackram certainly didn't. He got up and strode out of the firelight. Polly hurried after him.
"Did you hear that?" snarled the sergeant, staring out at the darkening hills. "The little yo-yo! What right has he got checking up in the Book of Words?"
"Well, you did quote chapter and verse, Sarge," said Polly.
"So? Officers are supposed to believe what they're told." And then he smiled. "Did you see? Caught me out and smiled at me. Thinks he's got one over on me just 'cause he caught me out."
"You did lie, Sarge."
"I did not, Perks. It's not lying when you do it to officers. It's presenting them with the world the way they think it ought to be. You can't let them start checking up for themselves. They get the wrong ideas. I told you, it'll be the death of all of us, invading the bloody keep. The man's wrong in the head."
"Sarge," said Polly urgently.
"Yes, what?"
"We're being signalled, Sarge." On a distant hilltop, twinkling like an early evening star, a white light was flashing. Blouse lowered his telescope.
"They're repeating CQ," he said, "and I believe those longer pauses are when they're aiming their tube in different directions. They're looking for their spies. CQ, see? Private Igor."
"Far?"
"You know how that tube works, don't you?"
"Oh, yes, far. You just light a flare in the box, and then it's just point and click."
"You're not going to answer it, are you, sir?" said Jackram, horrified. "I am indeed, Sergeant," said Blouse briskly. "Private Carborundum, please assemble the tube. Manacle, please bring the lantern. I shall need to read the codebook."
"But that'll give away our position," said Jackram.
"No, Sergeant, because although this term may be unfamiliar to you, I intend to what we call lie," said Blouse. "Igor, I'm sure you have some scissors, although I'd rather you didn't attempt to repeat the word."
"I have some of the appliances you mentioned, sir," said Igorina stiffly.
"Good." Blouse looked around. "It's almost pitch dark now. Ideal. Take my blanket and cut, a 3-inch circle out of it, and then tie the blanket over the front of the tube."
"That will cut off most of the light, sir."
"Indeed it will. My plan depends upon it," said Blouse proudly.
"Sir, they will see the light. They'll know we're here," said Jackram, as though repeating things to a child.
"I explained, Sergeant. I will lie," said Blouse.
"You can't lie when—"
"Thank you for your input, Sergeant. That will be all for now," said Blouse. "Are we ready, Igor?"
"Just about, sir,"
said Igorina, tying the blanket across the end of the tube.
"Okay, sir. I'll light the flare when you say."
Blouse unfolded the little book. "Ready, Private?" he said.
"Yep,"
said Jade.
"On the word long, you will hold the trigger for the count of two, and then let go. On the word short, you will hold it down for the count of one, and likewise let it go. Got that?"
"Yep, LT. Could hold it down for lots if you like,"
said Jade.
"One, two, many, lots. I'm good at counting. I as you like. Just say the word."
"Two will suffice," said Blouse. "And you, Private Goom, I want you to take my telescope and look for long and short flashes from that light over there. Understand?"
Polly saw Boz's face and said quickly, "I'll do that, sir." A small white hand was laid on her arm. In the miserly glimmer of the dark lantern, Boz's eyes glowed with the light of certainty.
"The Duchess guides our footsteps now," she said,
and took the telescope from the lieutenant.
"What we are doing is her work, sir."
"Is it? Oh, well, that's good," said Blouse.
"She will bless this instrument of far-seeing, that I may use it," said Wazza.
"Indeed," said Blouse nervously. "Well done. Now, are we ready? Send as follows. Long, long, short."
The shutter in the tube clicked and rattled as the message flashed out across the sky. When the troll lowered the tube, there was half a minute of darkness, and then Short, long, Wazza began. Blouse held the codebook up to his face, his lips moving as he read by the pinpoints of light escaping from the joints of the box. W-R-U, he said, and M-S-G-P-R.
That's not a message, said Jackram.
On the contrary, they want to know where we are, because they're having trouble seeing our light, said Blouse. Send as follows.
Short, I protest, sir.
Blouse lowered the book. Sergeant, I am about to tell our spy that we are 7 miles further away than we really are. Do you understand? And I am certain they will believe us, because I have artificially reduced the light output from our device. Do you understand? And I will tell them that their spies have encountered a very large party of recruits and deserters heading for the mountains and are in pursuit. Do you understand? I am making us invisible. Do you understand? Do you understand, Sergeant Jackram? The squad held their breath. Jackram drew himself stiffly to attention.
Fully understood, sir, he said.
Very well. Jackram stood to attention as the messages were exchanged, like a naughty pupil forced to stand by the teacher's desk. Messages flashed across the sky from hilltop to hilltop. Lights flickered. The clacks tube rattled. Wazza called out the longs and shorts. Blouse scribbled in the book. S-P-P-2, he said aloud. Ha! That's an order to remain where we are.
More flashes, sir, said Wazza.
T-Y-E-3, said Blouse, still making notes. That's be ready to give aid. N-V-A-S-N, that's not the code, sir, said Polly.
Private!
Send as follows, right now, Blouse croaked.
Long, long.
The message went. They watched while the dew fell, and overhead the stars came out and twinkled messages no one ever tried to read. The clacks went silent.
Now we leave as soon as possible, said Blouse. He gave a little cough. I believe the phrase is, let us get the heck out of here.
Close, sir, said Polly. Quite close. There was an old, very old, Borrogravian song with more Z's and V's in it than any lowlander could pronounce. It was called Blogvieždi, and it meant, the sun has risen, let's make war. You needed a special kind of history to get all that in one word. Sam Vimes sighed. The little countries here fought because of the river, because of idiot treaties, because of royal rows, but mostly they fought because they had always fought. They made war, in fact, because the sun came up. This war had tied itself in a knot. Downriver, the valley narrowed to a canyon before the Kinnick plunged over a waterfall a quarter of a mile high. Anyone trying to get up through the jagged mountains there would find themselves in a world of gorges, knife-edged ridges, permanent ice, and even more permanent death. Anyone trying to cross the Kinnick into Slovenia now would be butchered on the shore. The only way out of the valley was back along the Kinnick, which would put an army under the shadow of the keep. That had been fine when the keep was in Borrogravian hands. Now that it had been captured, they'd be passing in range of their own weapons. And such weapons! Vimes had seen catapults that would throw a stone ball 3 miles. When it landed, it would crack into needle-sharp shards. Or there was the other machine, which sent 6-foot steel discs skimming through the air. Once they'd hit the ground and leapt up again, they were unreliable as hell, but that only made them more terrifying. Vimes had been told that the edged disc would probably keep going for several hundred yards, no matter how many men or horses it encountered on the way. And they were only the latest ideas. There were plenty of conventional weapons, if by that you meant giant bows, catapults, and mangonels that hurled balls of Ephesian fire, which clung while it burned. From up here, in his drafty tower, he could see the fires of the dug-in army all across the plain. They couldn't retreat, and the Alliance, if that's what you could call the petulant hubbub, didn't dare head up the valley into the heart of the country with that army at their back, yet didn't have enough men to hold the keep and corral the enemy. And in a few weeks it would start to snow. The passes would fill up. Nothing would be able to get through. And every day, thousands of men and horses would need feeding.
Of course, the men could, eventually, eat the horses, thus settling two feeding problems at a stroke. After that, there would have to be the good old leg rotor, which, Vimes understood from one of the friendlier Slovenians, was a common feature of winter warfare up here. Since he was Captain Hopalong Splatzer, Vimes believed him. And then it would rain, and then the rain and the snow melt together would turn the damn river into a flood. But before that, the Alliance would have bickered itself apart and gone home. All the Borogravians had to do, in fact, was hold their ground to score a draw. He swore under his breath. Prince Heinrich had inherited the throne in a country where the chief export was a kind of hand-painted wooden clog. But in 10 years, he vowed, his capital city of Rigor would be the Ankh-Morpork of the mountains. For some reason, he thought Ankh-Morpork would be pleased about this. He was anxious, he said, to learn the Ankh-Morpork way of doing things, the kind of innocent ambition that could well lead to an aspiring ruler, well, finding out the Ankh-Morpork way of doing things. Heinrich had a reputation locally for cunning, but Ankh-Morpork had overtaken cunning 1,000 years ago, had sped past devious, had left artful far behind, and had now, by a roundabout route, arrived at straightforward. Vimes leafed through the papers on his desk, and looked up when he heard a shrill, harsh cry outside. A buzzard came in a long, shallow swoop through the open window and alighted on a makeshift perch at the far end of the room. Vimes strolled over as the little figure on the bird's back raised his flying goggles.
"How's it going, Buggy?" he said.
"They're getting suspicious, Mr. Vimes, and Sergeant Angra says it's getting a bit risky now if they're so close."
"Tell her to come on in, then."
"Right, sir. And they still need coffee."
"Oh, damn, haven't they found any?"
"No, sir. And it's getting tricky with the vampire."
"Well, if they're suspicious now, then they'll be certain if we drop a flask of coffee on them."
"Sergeant Angua says we'll probably get away with it, sir. She didn't see why."
The gnome looked expectantly at Vimes. So did his buzzard.
"They've come a long way, sir, for a bunch of girls. Well, mostly girls."
Vimes reached out absent-mindedly to pet the bird.
"Don't, sir, she'll have your thumb off," Buggy yelled.
There was a knock on the door, and Reg came in with a tray of raw meat.
"Saw Buggy over, Ed, so I thought I'd nip down to the kitchen, sir."
"Well done, Reg. Don't they ask why you want raw meat?"
"Yes, sir. I tell them you eat it, sir."
Vimes paused before answering. Reg meant well, after all.
"Well, it probably can't do my reputation any harm," he said. "By the way, what was going down in the crypt?"
"Oh, they're not what I'd call proper zombies, sir," said Reg,
selecting a piece of meat and dangling it in front of Morag.
"More like dead men walking."
Yes,
said Vimes.
"I mean, there's no real thinking going on,"
the zombie went on, picking up another lump of raw rabbit.
"No embracing the opportunities of a life beyond the grave, sir. They're just a lot of old memories on legs. The sort of thing that gives zombies a bad name, Mr. Vimes. It makes me so angry."
Morag tried to snap at another lump of bloody rabbit fur that Reg, oblivious for the moment, was waving aimlessly.
Reg,
said Buggy.
"How hard can it be, sir, to move with the times? Now take me, for example. One day I woke up dead. Did I—"
"Reg,"
Vimes warned as Morag's head bobbed back and forth.
"Take it lying down, no. And I didn't—"
"Reg, be careful. She's just had two of your fingers off."
"What? Oh."
Reg held up a denuded hand and stared at it.
"Oh, now, will you look at that?"
He peered down at the floor with a hope that was quickly dashed.
"Blast. Any chance we can make her throw up?"
"Only by sticking your remaining fingers down her throat, Reg. Sorry. Buggy, do the best you can, please. And you, Reg, go back downstairs and see if they've got any coffee, will you?"
"Oh, dear,"
murmured Shufti.
"It's big,"
said Tonka. Blouse said nothing.
"Not seen it before, sir,"
said Jackram cheerfully as they stared at the distant keep. If there is a fairy tale scale for castles, where the top end is occupied by those white, spire-encrusted castles with the blue, pointy roofs, then Kinnick Keep was low, black,
and clung to its outcrop like a storm cloud.
A bed of the Kinnock ran around it. Along the peninsula on which it was built, the approach road was wide and bereft of cover, and an ideal stroll for those who were tired of life. Blouse took all this in.
No, Sergeant, said Blouse. I've seen pictures, of course, but they don't do it justice.
Any of them books you read tell you what to do, sir, said Jackram.
They were lying in some bushes half a mile away from the keep.
Possibly, Sergeant. In the Craft of War, Song Sung Lo said, to win without fighting is the greatest victory. The enemy wishes us to attack where he is strongest, therefore we will disappoint him. A way will present itself, Sergeant.
Well, it's never presented itself to me, and I've been here dozens of times, said Jackram, still grinning. Ha! Even the rats would have to disguise themselves as washerwomen to get in that place. Even if you get up that road, you've got narrow entrances, holes in the ceiling to pour hot oil through, gates everywhere that a troll couldn't smash through, couple of mazes, 100 little ways you can be shot at. Oh, it's a wonderful place to attack.
I wonder how the Alliance got in, said Blouse.
Treachery, probably, sir. The world's full of traitors. Or perhaps they discovered the secret entrance, sir. You know, sir, the one you're sure is there. Or perhaps you've forgotten. It's the sort of thing that can slip your mind when you're busy, I expect.
We shall reconnoitre, Sergeant, said Blouse coldly,
as they crawled out of the bushes. He brushed leaves off his uniform.
Thalassophilos, or as Blouse referred to her, the faithful steed, had been turned loose miles back. You couldn't sneak around on horseback, and as Jackram had pointed out, the creature was too skinny for anyone to want to eat, and too vicious for anyone to want to ride.
Right, sir, yes, we might as well do that, sir, said Jackram now, all gloating helpfulness. Where would you like us to reconnoitre, sir?
There must be a secret entrance, Sergeant. No one would build a place like that with only one entrance. Agreed?
Yes, sir. Only perhaps they kept it a secret, sir. Only trying to help, sir.
They turned at the sound of urgent praying. Wazza had fallen to her knees, hands clasped together. The rest of the squad edged away slowly. Piety is a wonderful thing.
What is he doing, Sergeant? Said Blouse.
Praying, sir, said Jackram.
I've noticed he does that a lot. Is that, within regulations, Sergeant? The lieutenant whispered.
Always a difficult one, sir, that one, said Jackram. I have, myself, prayed many times on the field of battle. Many times have I said the soldier's prayer, sir, and I don't mind admitting it.
I don't think I know that one, said Blouse.
Oh, I reckon the words will come to you soon enough, sir, once you're up against the foe. Generally, though, they're on the lines of, Oh, God, let me kill this bastard before he kills me.
Jackram grinned at Blouse's expression.
That's what I call the authorized version, sir.
Yes, Sergeant, but where would we be if we all prayed all the time, said the lieutenant.
In heaven, sir, sitting at Nuggan's right hand, said Jackram promptly. That's what I was taught as a little nipper, sir. Of course, it'll be a bit crowded, so it's just as well we don't.
At which point, Wazza stopped praying and stood up, brushing dust off her knees. She gave the squad her bright, worrying smile.
"The Duchess will guide our steps," she said. "Oh, good," said Blouse weakly. "She will show us the way."
"Wonderful. Did she mention a map reference at all?" said the lieutenant.
"She will give us eyes that we might see."
"Ah, good. Well, jolly good," said Blouse. "I definitely feel a lot better for knowing that. Don't you, Sergeant?"
"Yes, sir," said Jackram. "'Cause before this, sir, we didn't have a prayer."
They scouted in threes, while the rest of the squad lay up in a deep hollow among the bushes. They were enemy patrols, but it's not hard to avoid half a dozen men who stick to the tracks and aren't being careful not to make a noise. The troops were as Lavinian, and acted as though they owned the place. For some reason, Polly ended up patrolling with Maledict and Wazza, or, to put it another way, a vampire on the edge, and a girl who was possibly so far over it that she'd found a new edge out beyond the horizon. She was changing every day, that was a fact. On the day they'd all joined up, a lifetime ago, she'd been this shivering little waif who flinched at shadows. Now, sometimes, she seemed taller, full of some ethereal certainty, and shadows fled before her. Well, not in actual fact, Polly would admit, but she walked as if they should. And then there had been the miracle of the turkey. That was hard to explain. The three of them had been moving along the cliffs.
They'd circled a couple of Slovenian lookout posts, forewarned by the smell of cooking fires, but alas not by the smell of any coffee. Maledict seemed to be mostly in control, except for a tendency to mutter to himself in letters and numbers, but Polly had stopped that by threatening to hit him with a stick the very next time he did it. They'd reached a cliff edge that gave yet another view of the keep, and once again Polly raised a telescope and scanned the sheer walls and jumbled rocks for any sign of another entrance.
"Look down at the river," said Wazza.
The circle of view blurred upwards as Polly shifted the scope. When it stopped moving, she saw whiteness. She had to lower the instrument to see what she'd been looking at.
"Oh, my," she said. "There's Blouse's secret entrance, right where anyone can see it."
"It'll make sense, though," said Maledict. "And there is a path all along the river, see? There's a couple more women on it."
"Tiny gateway, though," said Polly. "And it'd be so easy to search people for weapons."
"Soldiers couldn't get through, though," said the vampire.
"We could," said Polly. "And we're soldiers, aren't we?" There was a pause before Maledict said,
"The soldiers need weapons. Swords and crossbows get noticed."
"There will be weapons inside," said Wazza. "The Duchess has told me. The castle is full of weapons."
"Did she tell you how to make the enemy let go of them?" said Maledict.
"All right, all right," said Polly quickly. "We ought to tell the Rupert as soon as possible, okay? Let's get back."
"Hold on, I'm the corporal," said Maledict.
"Well," said Polly, "and?"
"Let's get back," said Maledict.
"Good idea." She should have listened to the birdsong, she realized later. The shrill calls in the distance would have told her the news, if only she'd been calm enough to listen. They hadn't gone more than 30 yards before they saw the soldiers. Someone in the Slovenian army was dangerously clever. He'd realized that the way to spot interlopers was not to march noisily along the beaten paths, but to sneak quietly between the trees. The soldier had a crossbow. It was sheer luck, probably sheer luck, that he was looking the other way when Polly came around a holly bush. She flung herself behind a tree and gestured madly at Maledict further down the path, who had the sense to take cover. Polly drew her sword and held it, clutched to her chest in both hands. She could hear the man. He was some way away, but he was moving toward her. Probably the little lookout they had just found was a regular point on the patrol route. After all, she thought bitterly, it was just the sort of thing some untrained idiots might come across. Maybe a quiet patrol could even surprise them there. She shut her eyes and tried to breathe normally. This was it. This was it. This was it. This was where she found out. What to remember? What to remember? What to remember? When the metal meets the meat, be holding the metal. She could taste metal in her mouth. The man would walk right past her. He'd be alert, but not that alert. A slash would be better than a stab. Yes, a good swipe at head height would kill. Some mother's son, some sister's brother, some lad who'd followed the drum for a shilling and his first new suit. If only she'd been trained, if only she'd had a couple of weeks stabbing straw men until she could believe that all men were made of straw. She froze. Down the angle of the path, still as a tree, head bowed, stood Wazza. As soon as the scout reached Polly's tree, she'd be seen. She'd have to do it now. Perhaps that's why men did it. You didn't do it to save duchesses or countries. You killed the enemy to stop him killing your mates, that they, in turn, might save you. She could hear the cautious tread close to the tree. She raised the sabre, saw the light flash along its edge. A wild turkey rose from the scrub on the other side of the path in one rocketing tower of wings and feathers and echoing noise. Half flying, half running, it bounded off into the woods. There was the thud of a bow and a last squawk.
"Oh, good shot, Woody," said a voice nearby. "Looks like a big 'un."
"Did you see that?" said another voice. "Another step and I'd have tripped over it."
Behind her tree, Polly breathed out. A third voice, some way off, called out,
"Let's head back, eh, Corp? The way that went off, the tiger's probably run a mile." "Yeah, and I'm so scared," said the closest voice. "The tiger's behind every tree, right?"
"Okay, let's call it a day. My wife'll cook him a treat."
Gradually, the voices of the soldiers got lost among the trees. Polly lowered the sword. She saw Maledict peer out of his bush and stare at her. She raised a finger to her lips. He nodded. She waited until the birdsong had settled down a little before stepping out. Wazza seemed to be lost in thought. Polly took her very carefully by the hand. Quietly, dodging from tree to tree, they headed back to the hollow. Most particularly, Polly and Maledict didn't talk, but they looked one another in the eye once or twice. Of course, a turkey would lie low until a hunter almost trod on it. Of course, that one must have been there all the time, and only lost its bird nerve when the scout crept up. It had been an unusually large bird, one that no hungry soldier could resist, but... well... since the brain treacherously does not stop thinking just because you want it to, Polly's added, she said the Duchess could move small things. How small is a thought in the mind of a bird? Only Jade and Igorina were waiting for them in the hollow. The others had found a better base a mile away, they said. "We found the secret entrance," said Polly quietly as they headed away.
"Can we get in?" said Igorina.
"It's the washerwoman's entrance," said Maledict. "It's right down by the river, but there's a path."
"Washerwomen?" said Igor. "But this is a wall."
"Clothes still get dirty, I suppose," said Polly.
"Dirtier, I should think," said Maledict.
"But our countrywomen washing clothes for the enemy?"
said Igorina, looking shocked.
"If it's that or starve, yes," said Polly. "I saw a woman come out carrying a basket of loaves. They say the keep is full of granaries. Anyway, you sewed up an enemy officer, didn't you?"
"That's different," said Igorina. "We are duty-bound to save our fellow person. Nothing has ever been said about his, their underwear."
"We could get in," said Polly, "if we disguised ourselves as women."
Silence greeted this. Then,
"Disguised?" said Igorina.
"You know what I mean," said Polly.
"As washerwomen?" said Igorina. "These are Thurgeon's hands."
"Really? Where did you get them?" said Maledict.
Igorina stuck out her tongue at him.
"Anyway, I don't intend that we should do any washing," said Polly.
"Then what do you intend?"
said Igorina. Polly hesitated.
"You know I want to get my brother out, if he's in there," she said. "And if we could stop the invasion, that would be a good idea."
"That might take extra starch," said Maledict. "I don't want to, you know, spoil the spirit of the moment, but that is a really awful idea. The L.T. won't agree to something as wild as that."
"No, he won't," said Polly. "But he'll suggest it."
"Hmm," said Blouse a little later. "Washerwomen, is that usual, Sergeant Jackram?" "Oh, yes, sir. I expect the women in the villages round here do it, just like they did when we held the keep," said Jackram. "You mean they provide aid and comfort to the enemy? Why?" "Better than starving, sir. Fact of life. It doesn't always stop at washing, neither." "Sergeant, there are young men here," snapped Blouse, blushing. "They'll have to find out about ironing and darning sooner or later, sir," said Jackram innocently. Blouse opened his mouth. Blouse shut his mouth.
"Tea's up, sir," said Polly.
Tea was an amazingly useful thing. It gave you an excuse to talk to anyone. They settled in what remained of a half-ruined farmhouse. By the look of it, not even patrols bothered to come here. There were no signs of lit fires or even the most temporary occupation. It stank of decay, and half the roof was gone.
"Do the women just come and go, Perks?" said the lieutenant.
"Yes, sir," said Polly. "And I had an idea, sir. Permission to tell you my idea, sir?"
She saw Jackram raise an eyebrow. She was laying it on thick, she had to admit, but time was pressing.
"Please do, Perks," said Blouse. "Else I fear you may explode."
"They could be spies for us, sir. We could even get them to open the gates for us."
"Well done, Private," said Blouse. "I do like a soldier to think."
"Yeah, right," growled Jackram. "Any sharper and he'll cut himself, sir. They're washerwomen, sir, basically. No offence to young Perks, keen lad that he is, but your average guard pays attention when old Mother Riley tries to open the gates. There's not just a pair of gates, neither. There's 6 pairs, and nice little courtyards between them for the guards to have a squint at you, and see if you's a wrong'un, and drawbridges, and spiky ceilings that drop down if someone doesn't like the look of you. Try opening that lot with soapy hands."
"I'm afraid the sergeant has a point, Perks," said Blouse, sadly.
"Well, supposing a couple of women managed to knock out a few guards, sir, they could let us in through their little door," said Polly. "We might even be able to capture the commander of the fort, sir. I bet there's plenty of women in the keep, sir, in the kitchens and so on. They could..."
open doors for us.
Oh, come on, Perks, Jackram began.
No, Sergeant, wait, said Blaz. Astonishingly enough, Perks, in your boyish enthusiasm you have, although you haven't realized it, given me a very interesting idea.
Have I, sir? Said Polly, who in her boyish enthusiasm had considered trying to tattoo the idea on Blouse's head. For someone so clever, he really was slow.
Indeed you have, Perks, said Blouse, because, of course, we only need one washerwoman to get us inside, do we not?
The quotes sounded promising.
Well, yes, sir, said Polly. And if one, as it were, thinks outside of the box, the woman does not, in fact, need to be a woman.
Blouse beamed. Polly allowed her brow to wrinkle in honest puzzlement.
Doesn't she, sir? She said. I don't think I quite understand, sir. I am perplexed, sir.
She could be a man, Perks, said Blouse, almost exploding with delight. One of us, in disguise.
Polly breathed a sigh of relief. Sergeant Jackram laughed.
Bless you, sir, dressing up as a washerwoman is for getting out of places, military rules.
If a man gets inside, he could disable any guards near the door, spy out the situation from a military perspective, and let the rest of the troops in, said Blouse.
If this was done at night, men, we could be holding key positions by the morning.
But these aren't men, sir, said Jackram.
Polly turned. The sergeant was looking right at her, right through her.
Oh, darn, I mean damn, he knows.
I beg your pardon?
They are my little lads, sir, Jackram went on, winking at Polly. Keen lads, full of mustard, but they ain't ones for cutting throats and stabbing hearts. They signed up to be pikemen in the press, sir, in a proper army. You're my little lads, I says to 'em when I signed 'em up, and I will look after you. I can't stand by and let you take 'em to certain death.
It's my decision to make, Sergeant, said Blouse. We are at the hinge of destiny. Who in the pinch is not ready to lay down his life for his country?
In a proper stand-up fight, sir, not getting beaten over the head by a bunch of nasty men for creeping around their fort. You know I've never been one for spies and hiding your colours, sir, never.
Sergeant, we have no choice. We must take advantage of the tide of fortune.
I know about tides, sir. They leave little fish gasping.
The sergeant stood up, fists clenching.
Your concern for your men does you credit, Sergeant, but it falls to us.
A famous last stand, sir, said Jackram.
He spat expertly into the fire of the tumble-down hearth.
Twill with them, sir. That's just a way of dying famous.
Sergeant, your insubordination is getting...
I'll go, said Polly quietly. Both men stopped, turned, and stared.
I'll go, Polly repeated louder. Someone ought to.
Don't be daft, Perks, snaps Jackram. You don't know what's in there. You don't know what guards are waiting just inside the door. You don't know...
I'll find out then, Sarge, won't I? Said Polly, smiling desperately. Maybe I can get to somewhere where you can see and send signals, or...
On this issue, at least, the sergeant and I are of one mind, Perks, said Blouse. Really, Private, it would simply not work.
Oh, you're brave, certainly, but what makes you think you stand a chance of passing yourself off as a woman?
Well, sir, what?
Your keenness will not go unrecorded, Perks, said Blouse, smiling.
But, you know, a good officer keeps an eye on his men, and I have to say that I've noticed in you, in all of you, little habits. Perfectly normal, nothing to worry about, like the occasional deep exploration of a nostril, maybe, and a tendency to grin after passing wind, a natural boyish inclination to scratch yourselves in public, that sort of thing. These are the kind of little details that would give you away in a trice and tell any observer that you were a man in women's clothing, believe me.
I'm sure I could pull it off, sir, said Polly weakly. She could sense Jackram's eyes on her.
You bloody well know, don't you? How long have you known?
Blouse shook his head.
No, they would see through you in a flash. You are a fine bunch of lads, but there is only one man here who'd stand a chance of getting away with it. Manacle?
Yes, sir,
said Shufti, rigid with instant panic.
Can you all find me a dress, do you think?
Maledict was the first to break the silence.
Sir, are you telling us you're going to try to get in dressed as a woman?
"Well, I'm clearly the only one who's had any practice," said Blouse, rubbing his hands together. "At my old school, we were in and out of skirts all the time."
He looked around at the circle of absolutely expressionless faces.
"Theatricals, you see,"
he said brightly.
"No girls at our boarding school, of course. But we didn't let that stop us. Why, my Lady Sprightly in a comedy of cuckolds is still talked about, I understand. And as for my yum-yum, is Sergeant Jackham all right?"
The sergeant had folded up, but with his face still level with his knees, he managed to croak,
"Old war wounds, sir, come upon me sudden-like."
"Please help him, Private Igor. Where was I? I can see you all look puzzled, but there's nothing strange about this. Fine old tradition, men dressing up as girls. In the sixth form, the chaps used to do it for their jape all the time." He paused for a moment and added thoughtfully, "Especially Wrigglesworth, for some reason." He shook his head as if dislodging a thought and went on, "Anyway, I have some experience in this field, you see."
"And what would you do if, I mean, when you got in, sir?" said Polly. "You won't just have to fool the guards. There'll be other women in there."
"That will not present a problem, Perks," said Blouse. "I shall act in a feminine way, and I have this stage trick, do you see, where I make my voice sound quite high-pitched like this."
The falsetto could have scratched glass.
"See?" he said. "No. If we need a woman, I'm your man."
"Amazing, sir," said Maledict. "For a moment I could have sworn there was a woman in the room."
"And I could certainly find out if there are any other badly guarded entrances," Blouse went on. "Who knows? I might even be able to procure a key off one of the guards by means of feminine wiles. In any case, if things are all clear, I shall send a signal. A towel hanging from a window, perhaps. Something clearly unusual, anyway."
There was some more silence. Several of the squad were staring at the ceiling.
"Yes," said Polly. "I can see you've thought this out carefully, sir."
Blouse sighed.
"If only Wrigglesworth were here," he said.
"Why, sir?"
"Amazingly clever chap at laying his hands on a dress, young Wrigglesworth," said the lieutenant.
Polly caught Maledict's eye. The vampire made a face and shrugged.
Said Shufti. "Yes, Manacle. I do have a petticoat in my back, sir."
"Good heavens, why?"
Shufti went red. She hadn't worked out an answer.
"Bandages, sir,"
Igorina cut in smoothly.
"Yes, yes, that's right," said Shufti. I found it in the inn, back in Bloon."
"I asked the lads to acquire any suitable linen they might find, sir, just in case."
"Very sound thinking, that man," said Blouse. "Anyone else got anything?"
"I wouldn't be at all surprised, sir,"
said Igor, staring around the room. Glances were exchanged. Packs were unslung. Everyone except Polly and Maledict had something, produced with downcast eyes. A shift, a petticoat, and, in most cases, a dimity scarf, carried out of some sort of residual, unexplainable need.
"You obviously must have thought we'd take serious damage," said Blouse.
"Can't be too careful, sir,"
said Igorina. She grinned at Polly.
"Of course. I have rather short hair at present," Blouse mused.
Polly thought of her ringlets, now lost and probably stroked by Strappy, but desperation spooled through her memory.
"They looked like older women, mostly," she said quickly. "They wore headscarves and wimples. I'm sure Igor can make up something, sir."
"We Igors are very resourceful, sir,"
Igorina agreed. She pulled a black leather wallet out of her jacket.
10 minutes with a needle, sir, that's all I'll need."
"Oh, I can do old women wonderfully well," said Blouse.
With a speed that made Lofty jump, he suddenly thrust out both hands twisted like claws, contorted his face into an expression of mad imbecility, and screeched,
"Oh, dearie me, my poor old feet! Things today aren't like they used to be. Lawks!"
Behind him, Sergeant Jackram put his head in his hands.
"Amazing, sir," said Maledict. "I've never seen a transformation like it."
"Perhaps just a wee bit less old, sir," Polly suggested,
although in truth Blouse had reminded her of her Aunt Hattie 2/3 of the way through a glass of sherry.
"You think so?" said Blouse. "Oh, well, if you're really sure."
"And, if you do meet a guard,
old women don't usually try to... canoodle, cut in Maledict, whose mind had clearly been hurtling down the same horrible slope. Canoodle with them, Polly added, blushing, and then, after a second's thought, added, unless she's had a glass of sherry anyway.
And I do suggest you go and have a shave, sir.
Shave? Said Blouse. Shave, sir, said Polly. I'll lay out the kit, sir.
Oh, yes, of course. Don't see many old women with beards, eh?
Except my auntie Parthenope, as I recall. And no one's got a couple of balloons, have they? Asked the lieutenant.
Away, sir, said Tonker. A big bosom always gets a laugh, said Blouse.
He looked around the row of faces.
Not a good idea, perhaps? I got a huge round of applause as the widow Trembler in Tish Pity She's a Tree.
No?
I think Igor could sew something a bit more realistic, sir, said Polly.
Really?
Oh, well, if you really think so, said Blouse dejectedly. I'll just go and get myself into character.
He disappeared into the building's only other room. After a few seconds, the rest of them heard him reciting, "Lawks, my poor feet!" in varying tones of fingernail screech. The squad went into a huddle.
"What was all that about?" said Tonker.
"He was talking about the theatre," said Maledict.
"What's that?"
"An abomination unto Nuggan, of course," said the vampire.
"It'd take too long to explain, dear child. People pretending to be other people to tell a story in a huge room where the world is a different place. Other people sitting and watching them and eating chocolate. Very, very abominable."
"I would like to eat chocolates in a great big room where the world is a different place," mumbled Lofty, sadly.
"I saw a Punch and Judy show in the town once," said Shifty. "Then they dragged the men away, and it became an abomination."
"I remember that," said Polly. Crocodiles should not be seen to eat figures of authority, apparently. Although until the puppet show, no one in the town knew what a crocodile was. The bit where the clown had beaten his wife has also contravened abomination, because he'd used a stick thicker than the regulation 1 inch.
"The lieutenant won't last a minute, you know," she said.
"Yes, but he won't listen, will he?" said Igorina. "I'll do the best with my scissors and needle to make a woman of him, but..."
"Igorina, when it's you talking about this sort of thing, some very strange pictures stirring up in my head," said Maledict.
"Sorry," said Igorina.
"Can you pray for him, Wazza?" said Polly. "I think we're going to need a miracle here."
Wazza obediently closed her eyes and folded her hands for a moment, and then said shyly,
"I'm afraid she says it will take more than a turkey."
"Was," said Polly, "do you really—" Then she stopped, with the bright little face watching her.
"Yes, I do," said Wazza. "I really talk to the Duchess."
"Yeah, well, I used to, too," snapped Tonker. "I used to beg her once upon a time. That stupid face just stared and did nothing. She never stopped anything. All that stuff, all that stupid—"
The girl stopped, too many words blocking her brain.
"Anyway, why should she talk to you?"
"Because I listen," said Wazza quietly.
"And what does she say?"
"Sometimes she just cries."
"She cries?"
"Because there are so many things that people want, and she can't give them anything."
Wazza gave them all one of her smiles that lit up the room.
"But everything will be fine when I'm in the right place," she said.
"Well, that's all right then," Polly began, in that cloud of deep embarrassment that Wazza called up within her.
"You're right," said Tonker, "but I'm not praying to anyone, okay, ever again. I don't like this, Waz. You're a decent kid, but I don't like the way you smile." She stopped.
"Oh, no." Polly stared at Wazza. Her face was thin and all angles, and the Duchess in the painting had looked, well, like an overfed turbot. But now the smile, the actual smile...
"I'm not putting up with that," Tonker snarled. "You stop that right now, I mean it. You're giving me the creeps. Oz, you stop her, him smiling like that."
"Just calm down, all of you," Polly began.
"Bleedingwell, shut up," said Jackram. "A man can't hear himself chew. Look, you're all edgy, that happens. And Wazza here's just got a bit of religion before the fight. That happens too. And what you do is, you save it all up for the enemy. Quieten down."
That is what we in the military call an order, okay?
Perks?
It was Blouse. You'd better hurry, said Maledict. His corset probably wants lacing. In fact, Blouse was sitting on what remained of a chair.
Ah, Perks, shave, please, he said.
Oh, I thought your hand was better, sir.
Yes.
Blouse looked awkward.
The problem, Perks, is... I have never actually shaved myself at all, to be honest. I had a man to do it for me at school, and then, of course, in the army, I shared a batman with Blitherskite, and, those attempts I made on my own behalf have been somewhat bloody. I never really thought about it until I got to plots, and, suddenly it was embarrassing.
Sorry about that, sir, said Polly. It was a strange old world.
Later on, perhaps you could give me a few tips, Blouse went on. You keep yourself beautifully shaven, I can't help noticing. General Frock would be pleased. He's very anti-whiskers, they say.
If you like, sir, said Polly. There was no getting out of it. She made a show of sharpening the razor. Perhaps she could manage it with only a few small cuts.
Do you think I should have a reddened nose? Said Blouse.
Probably, sir, said Polly. Sarge knows about me, I'm sure, she thought. I know he does. Why is he keeping quiet?
Probably, Perks.
What? Oh, no. Why a red nose, sir? Said Polly, applying the lather with vigour.
It would look more... amusing, perhaps.
Not sure that's the purpose of the exercise, sir. Now, if you'd just lie back, sir...
There's something you should know about young Perks, sir.
Polly actually yelped. Walking as silently as only a sergeant can, Jackram had stolen into the room.
Sergeant, said Blouse.
Perks doesn't know how to shave a man, sir, said Jackram. Give me the razor, Perks.
Doesn't know how to shave, said Blouse.
No, sir. Perks lied to us, right, Perks?
All right, Sarge, no need to drag it out, sighed Polly. Lieutenant, I'm...
Underage, said Jackram. Right, Perks? Only 14, aren't you?
Jackram looked at Polly over the top of the lieutenant's head and winked.
I told a lie to get enlisted, sir, yes, said Polly.
I don't think a lad like that ought to be dragged into the keep, however game he is, said Jackram. And I don't think he's the only one, right, Perks?
Oh, so that's the game. Blackmail, Polly thought.
Yes, Sarge, she said wearily.
Can't have a massacre of little lads, sir, now can we? Said Jackram.
I see your point, Sergeant, said the lieutenant, as Jackram gently drove the blade down his cheek. That is a tricky one.
Best to call it a day, then, said Jackram.
On the other hand, Sergeant, I do know that you yourself joined up as a child, said Blouse.
The blade stopped moving.
Well, it was all different in those, Jackram began.
You were 5 years old, apparently, the lieutenant went on. You see, when I heard that I'd be meeting you, a legend in the army, of course I had a look at our files so that I could, perhaps, make a few timely jokes in presenting you with your honourable discharge. You know, humorous little reminiscences about times gone by. Imagine how puzzled I was, therefore, to find that you appear to have been drawing actual wages for, well, it was a little hard to be certain, but possibly as much as 60 years.